The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
So we had a lengthy conversation on Friday about the debacle of Joe Biden's performance in the TV debate on Thursday evening, the presidential TV debate in the US. It was Marion McKeown and Larry Donnelly because Cal Thomas was unavailable to us, but he's back with Marion tonight. And Cal, I'm going to invite you to indulge in the opportunity to say, I told you so.
Well, welcome back, Mac. It was just not the same without you. Look, I'm not the only one telling us so. I mean, the voters now, the people, 72%, including Republicans and Democrats, according to the latest CBS News YouGov poll, have said that Biden should not run for a second term. It's very clear, it's not partisan, that the man has some serious problems. You saw that not just in the debate, but we've seen it for the last year or two. It's very, very sad. And there are people who are propping him up and saying, no, he's different in private than he is in public. Nobody believes that anymore, if they ever did. I think they are doing it because they like the power, they like all of the benefits that go with the office. But this is something that is important for the country. Our adversaries are looking at Biden and are making decisions about what they're going to do. It's very, very sad. I do not rejoice over this. He is the president of the United States. Whether I voted for him or not, and nobody wants to see a president fail, at least I don't.
Okay, but if somebody was to replace him, would you then feel more comfortable about voting for that Democrat to keep Donald Trump out of office?
Well, it depends on their policies, of course. It's not about the label, it's about the policies. I don't see any of those being mentioned, from California Governor Gavin Newsom to Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan, to any of the others who have policies different than the current president. But I do think it would be better for the Democrat Party, and especially what we call the down-ballot candidates for Senate and House and other offices, if they had somebody that would turn out more of their Democratic base. There is a lot of talk now about Democrats who are so frustrated that they just might stay home, which would give an advantage to Donald Trump and to other Republicans running for the Senate and the House.
I'm going to ask you the same question again, Cal, though slightly reframed, because you say it's dependent on the policies. Yeah. But given what we've seen of the policies and the personality of Donald Trump, surely anyone on the Democratic side who is functioning properly would be better for America than Trump.
Well, we'll see. I mean, we've talked about this on the show before several times. I don't like the choices. Polls show that most Americans don't like the choices. They would rather have somebody else than Trump and somebody else than Biden. But that's what we've got. And again, it depends on the policies. I mean, I happen to agree with Trump's policies on the border, on the economy, and a number of the other things. I certainly don't agree with some of his rhetoric, the latest being he thinks a tribunal should be created to try Liz Cheney and other people that he doesn't like. I think that's extremely dangerous language.
And that's the sort of dangerous thing. And also, whatever about Biden's desperate performance in relation in the debate the other night, at least he didn't lie and lie and lie and lie as Donald Trump did. The lies actually ran into the hundreds. He hardly said a truthful word in the entire debate. How can you have somebody like that, Cal, as your president?
Well, I've just wrote a column on Biden's lies. I mean, he stole plenty of his own, not only that his uncle was shot down in World War II and eaten by cannibals, that he was the first in his family to go to college, that he finished near the top of his class, and it goes on and on and on, and he's been that way for years. So, you know, politicians always lie at some point.
Cal, you can't equate whatever exaggerations and mistakes Biden makes with the outright gaslighting lies that Trump engaged in all the time.
Well,
he's on another. He is the guy who's the convicted felon, after all, because of the lies he told.
Interesting you brought that up, Matt, because both the prosecution and the defense in that New York trial have agreed that the sentencing, which was scheduled for July 11th, should be put back while the judge, Merchan, decides whether the latest Supreme Court ruling on on the president's immunity has any effect on that case.
Okay, and I'll get to that in a moment. But Marion McKeown, we did have you on the programme with us on Friday in the immediate aftermath of the debate debacle. But since then, how much pressure is coming on within the Democratic Party to ditch their man and put in place somebody who might have a better chance of beating Trump?
I think that it may be growing. The first Democrat, just a couple of moments ago, to come out, came out publicly. It's a congressman, not a very well-known congressman, but he's been around since 1996 from Texas. A Democrat has called on Biden to step aside. Sometimes when that happens, when one person comes out publicly, it almost breaks the, you know, then it's followed by a dam burst of other people. I saw Nancy Pelosi and James Clyburn, who are fiercely loyal to Biden, and being interviewed earlier this morning, and Pelosi acknowledged that she hasn't spoken to Biden since the debate. Neither has Jim Clyburn, who, of course, really, but for Clyburn, Biden would not have become president, I think, in 2020. He really turned a dismal primary season around for him and got him the nomination. I think that there's justified concern amongst Democrats. There was a meeting with donors last night and a meeting with Never Trumper Republicans, as I understand it, a phone meeting as well, to try and shore them up and say, look, don't desert us. But it's clear that Biden does have some very real problems, and he might be fine with a teleprompter in a friendly room, but he does not seem to be able to deal with the rough and tumble of an election campaign beyond that, of dealing with journalists, of taking tough questions, and of performing in a debate. And I think it is really worrying. Perversely, I think the Supreme Court decision, which I know we'll get to, may help him. He came out last night and was quite strong and saying, look, it's all more reason now that we cannot afford to let Donald Trump back into the White House, given that the Supreme Court has written a carte blanche for him to, you know, literally a get out of jail free card for him. And so I think that was quite interesting, the way that he hopped on that quite quickly.
Yeah, but sorry, Marion, that's something for another Democrat nominee to hop on. I mean, all of the reasons why the Democrats want to keep Donald Trump out of office apply. So, given that Biden, even if it's not an enormously significant when it comes to voting intentions, it's significant enough in the swing states to mean that he can't be re-elected. Surely he's not so egotistical and vain that he can't see that. Surely the Democrats aren't so spineless so that senior people in the party can't go to him and say, Joe, thank you for your service. You have been wonderful, but the time is up. You have got to quickly pass the baton on to somebody else to save America from Donald Trump.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. All of those things you would imagine would and should be happening. But the fact is, the people that I've spoken to in the Democratic Party, some of whom are quite close to Biden, say he's incredibly stubborn, that you really don't tell Biden what to do at the end of the day. And that there is a sort of feeling which is evaporating now. Look, this guy's been underestimated all his life. He won 2020. He had the best midterms for a Democrat since John F. Kennedy. Everybody keeps, you know, underestimating him, and he keeps, you know, surprising them. I don't think that's necessarily going to work this autumn, but there is a feeling that if an incumbent decides to run again, that they have the right, and you can't really knock them off their perch. And that seems to be at the moment what's crippling Democrats, that they really feel that it's not appropriate for them. They're hoping Biden will come to this realization himself and that he may get nudges.
How naive that is. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. Well, we'll see. You know what? I think we'll see what happens. Biden is very, very stubborn, but I think that even he must realise. I mean, there's been speculation behind the scenes that there are neurological issues involved as well, that it's not just that he's getting old, that there is something else afoot here. And I think that it may be possible that there may be a medical reason for him to come out and say, look, you know, I don't think I should be doing this. But as you say, he'd want to do it pretty quickly. I mean, there is a dream ticket of Gretchen Whitmer and Wes Moore standing in the wings, which would be a perfect ticket. But then again, it's naive also to think that anybody you know, like rising stars. Look at Jeb Bush, look at Kamala Harris even. They were rising stars in their states, in Florida, California. They did not make the transition to the national stage in the way people thought. Everyone thinks Gretchen Whitmer is terrific. I do as well. But she will have 10 weeks, basically, to introduce herself to America and to beat Trump. It's an impossible ask.
No, it's not.
For almost anyone.
It's not. The rules of politics have changed. This idea that you keep going by the old standards of introduction. I mean, you would have said back in 2015, 2016, that it was impossible for Donald Trump to get elected, even though he had a long run-in, that somebody coming from a celebrity television background wouldn't be accepted by the American people. Cal Thomas, what about the suggestion there of a Democratic nominee? Could she beat Trump in an election, do you think?
Well, first of all, Trump has 99% of the delegates going into the Democratic convention. He would have to free them, as they say, and allow the delegates to pick somebody else. I don't see him doing that.
Sorry, Biden would have to.
Yes. At the weekend, there was a family meeting between Biden and Jill Biden and Hunter Biden at Camp David in Maryland. And the word that is leaked out from various sources is that he's staying in. I think Jill Biden has a lot to do with that. And Hunter does as well. I think Hunter's looking for a pardon, even though the president says he's not going to give him one, especially with that tax fraud case coming up in September, which is much, much bigger than the gun case and lying on an application for a gun. So everything is up in the air, Matt. I mean, nobody can predict what's going to happen. And I agree with you on the introduction part. We have social media, we have television, we have all kinds of things. Somebody can be introduced, if you have to call it that, to a national audience basically overnight.
Okay, so Marion, just explain that Supreme Court decision yesterday, please.
Okay, well, the Supreme Court decided yesterday that basically there is absolute immunity for a U.S. president for what they described as core presidential activities. So things like, I presume, pardons, appointments, all those kind of things. But the problem is they were so vague about it that we really have a problem in trying to understand what they meant. So the main takeaway was that there's absolute immunity for core presidential acts, and that there would also have to be a presumption of immunity for any kind of indirect, if you will, presidential acts. But to me, the key thing was, one of the examples they used, which I was so dumbfounded and shocked by, was that Donald Trump, a key part of his attempt to overthrow the election was to try and co-opt the Department of Justice to do it between November 3rd or 4th, 2020 and January 6th. And he tried to get the acting Attorney General and his deputy both to write to the Republican legislators in the swing states and say there's been huge fraud in the election, hold all the votes, stop everything. Now, they correctly refused to do it, and then he tried to get another guy, a guy called Jeff Clark, who was a deputy for the Environmental Department or something, to come in and do it, and he tried to pressure them, and he said, look, I'll make you Attorney General, basically, if you do this. Now, if that isn't intent of corruption and intent of, you know, trying to overturn an election, I don't know what is. But under this Supreme Court ruling, they said, none of that can be introduced, because Donald Trump was involved in an official act in speaking to people in the Department of Justice. So what they basically said is, it doesn't matter what he was saying to them. It doesn't matter if he said, go out there and kill every person under the age of 18. He was able to, because he was speaking to them as president, that is protected.
Okay.
That to me just seems insane.
Cal, I want to go to you on the Supreme Court decision yesterday, which Donald Trump greeted on Truth Social with an all caps statement. Big win for our constitution and democracy. Proud to be an American. However, I think many of us outsiders, non-Americans, would perhaps associate ourselves with Justice Sonia Sotomayor in a minority dissent. She wrote that the decision, quote, makes a mockery of the principle foundational to our constitution and system of government that no man is above the law. Isn't that what the Supreme Court has done? They have allowed Donald Trump to be above the law.
Well, no, I don't agree with that. I think the Wall Street Journal was correct in its editorial. It said the 6-3 court majority rightly focuses on the institution of the presidency and the ability of all presidents, not merely the last one, meaning Trump, to act in the national interest free from prosecution for official acts. Now, what the court also did is send the decision back down to the lower court, U.S. District Court, to define what is an official act and what isn't. So that's going to be interesting to see how that works out.
But, sorry, Cal, isn't that an act of cowardice and deliberate neglect on the part of the Supreme Court not to make that decision itself, to send it back down to the lower courts, knowing that whatever it comes up with down there will be appealed and will get back to the Supreme Court so it can delay everything until Trump is back in office and pardons himself?
It's done all the time, Matt. The Supreme Court, when it was a liberal majority, has done that before. And I'm always amused, you know, the left in this country was fine with all Supreme Court rulings when they had an ideological majority on the court. But now that there's a conservative majority, everything the court does is a threat to democracy and immoral and evil. It really is amusing. I've written a column for tomorrow, which talks about other presidents and the decisions they made. John F. Kennedy in the Bay of Pigs disaster. Lyndon Johnson using the phony Gulf of Tonkin resolution to increase American presence in Vietnam and the disaster that that led to. Harry Truman dropping two atomic bombs on Japan. Should these men have been prosecuted when they left office by a partisan successor?
You see, Cal, I think there's a big difference here because we know that Donald Trump doesn't act in relation to the greater good or the people of America. He does for his own ruthless self-interest. And there's a listener here, Mark, has a great question, which is relevant to the examples you've just given. Does that mean the Supreme Court ruling, would that mean that Watergate would not have been illegal? That when Richard Nixon acted during Watergate, and which brought him down as president, that in a modern era, he'd be able to say, it was fine what I was doing because I was acting as president of the United States.
Well, that could have been true, but of course he resigned, and that was one of the options when those Republicans went to the White House and said that he would not survive an impeachment vote. This is what the founders have put in our Constitution, and this is the way to go through impeachment. Now, even impeachment is being used as a political sword. We saw it twice against Donald Trump, and now we're seeing Republicans use it against the Attorney General Merrick Garland and against the Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas. This stuff gets out of hand and very quickly. And I think I think we need to go back to the Constitution. And if a president is doing illegal things, and it can be proved that's what a Senate trial is about, then let him be impeached and let him be tried and let him be removed from office. That's what the founders decided, and I think that's the best route to go.
So, Marion, I'm going back to the question that Mark sent in. Does that Supreme Court ruling mean that Watergate would not have been illegal?
Absolutely. And the first person to come out and make that point was John Dean, of course, who went to prison for his role in the Watergate. He said that Nixon would never have resigned had he had that ruling, that there would have been no need for him. He would have basically skated because he could have easily, you know, this mess. What I find really bizarre about this is that you had Neil Gorsuch in this lofty tone back in, I think it was February or whenever, saying this will be a ruling for the ages. We're going to take our time with this as justification for dragging it out to the very last minute. And then they come up with this mess that really a first-year law student would have failed a paper on a similar finding, I think, because they gave no guidance other than to say, as you said, oh, go back down to the lower court. Of course, Trump will appeal it straight back up again. And this thing about, you know, some official acts, unofficial acts, but then to me, the most pernicious part is saying that just because you happen to be speaking to somebody who is an appointee, you know, who is a federal appointee, that anything you say to them cannot be used to signal your criminal intent. It's absolutely bizarre. So I don't know where this is going to go. I don't think this is sustainable. But I also, what I worry about, and I've said it on this show before, is the American public is losing faith in its institutions rapidly. And that is how autocrats take root, because it no longer trusts the Supreme Court to do the right thing. It hasn't trusted Congress in a long time. And it's seen the way Trump behaved in, you know, as president, where it was just a rampant, as you say, self-interested free-for-all. So I really worry for the future of America. I don't think it's ever been in a more dire position.
Cal, can you remember America, a threat to democracy of the nature you are facing now internally?
Yes, it's called the Civil War. It was.
You can't remember that, Cal. I know you're old, but you weren't around for that.
Yeah, I've driven a Lincoln, but I didn't know a Lincoln. So, yeah, look, you mentioned Congress. People vote for their members. If you don't like who is in office, then you should vote for somebody else. If you don't like who is in the presidency, then you have the option of voting for somebody else, as we will have that option in November. So let's stop blaming the elected officials and look to ourselves. We're the people who put these people in office. If we don't like them, it's our fault.
Can you see yourself voting for Donald Trump to be your next president?
Well, I voted for him twice, and if I do, it will be with great reluctance. But I mean, what are the choices? Okay, the other choice is to stay home and do nothing. And when you do that, then all you do is cede the territory to somebody else who is going to win. I think there are certain policies that need to be enacted. Number one, according to all the polls, is immigration. We have got to control our southern border. No nation has ever been able to survive without controlling their immigration. And then the national debt, it's almost $35 trillion, the biggest in the history of the United States. We are spending ourselves into oblivion. The Congressional Budget Office says by 2035, the debt will be $54 trillion unless it's dealt with. You can't go on like that. And yes, Trump increased spending during his time in office, but a lot of that was because of COVID. So I don't know. It's only July. We'll have to see. Ask me again in early October.
It all depends on who the Democrats replace Joe Biden with, if they replace him as they should. Cal Thomas and Marion McKeown, thank you.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.